Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hey everyone, this is John Rocha, one third of the Geek Buddies, with this awesome ad for you. If you like this show and you want to make your own, and some of you have reached out and asked us about making your own podcast, well, let me tell you about Anchor. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And now you can even add any song from Spotify directly to your episodes. The possibilities are endless for what you can create, whether it's music analysis, your own radio show, or something the world's never heard before. Go ahead and let your freak flag fly. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and so many more places. And you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Take it from us here at the Geek Buddies. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now, on with the Geek Buddies show. Everyone, and welcome to this spoiler review for Invincible Season 1 from the
Geek Buddies!
Recording early in the morning, you can now. Well, we're gonna get into some things here. You know, this incredible series, thank you all for joining us, first of all, this incredible series from Amazon Prime and Robert Kirkman and a few other people that we're going to mention here in just a little bit, is an adaptation of the comic that was written by Kirk. There's a number of compilations of this out right now, and we're gonna break this first season down, 8 episodes, incredible stuff. What, 45 to 50 minute episodes per episode, chock full of storylines, chock full of some fantastic voiceover acting, some great animation, and we're going to jump into all of it here on this review. And if you have not seen Invincible Season 1, maybe this is the time to stop, go watch it, then come on back and pick up where you left off here for this review.
Definitely, Michael, go watch it first. Go watch it first. Yeah. Don't listen to us. Go watch that.
This is not that kind of situation. Go watch it, then come back and listen to us. So let's start off first. Overall, gentlemen, well, I guess I should give a little bit of the plot here. Stephen Yeun plays his character named Mark Grayson, a young 17-year-old kid, his normal high school senior with a normal part-time job and otherwise normal life, except his dad, voiceover portrayed by J.K. Simmons. Nolan is Omni-Man, the most powerful superhero on the planet, saving people alongside the most famous troop of heroes, the Guardians of the Globe. Mark begins to display his latent superpowers, which comes from his father being a member of the Viltrumite race, and they are, according to Nolan, supposed to protect the galaxy on a mission of benevolence and enlightenment. But of course, that isn't the case, and it leads to all kinds of insane situations, overwhelming situations, emotionally draining situations, and some fantastic scenes and moments throughout the series. Gentlemen, I'll start with you, Vogel. What was your overall feeling now, as you've had a few days to process the finale and the entire series of Invincible?
I just have an overall feeling in general in life right now that it is a great time to be a geek. That is my overall feeling, because the content that we get continues to raise the bar every single time, whether that is the Marvel shows, Mandalorian, The Boys on Amazon, like every single time we're getting these adaptations. A lot of people today don't remember when we used to get adaptations of things, they were not great.
Yeah.
We were just lucky to see something on screen. Yeah. And Invincible, being one of my favorite comic books of all time, I have been excited every single time that I've heard news about Invincible, whether it was a live action movie or an animated series, and always wondering, like, will they be able to match the tone of the comic? Mm-hmm. Will they be able to match the emotional impact of the comic? Will they be able to go as far as the comic went? And what's been amazing about this series is not only did they go as far as the comic went, in a lot of ways they went further, and by some of the story changes they made the story even better. So I could not be happier. It was an intense ride, even knowing where things were going to end up. I mean, even knowing where they were going to end season one, it still was a rough watch, and I couldn't be happier. And I'm really excited to talk about what this show does for the superhero genre and what it says about the superhero genre.
Yeah, Shannon, Mike makes excellent points here. Along with Steven Yeun and J.K. Simmons, we also had Sandra Oh, Seth Rogen, Gillian Jacobs, Zazie Beetz, Mark Hamill, Walton Goggins, Jason Mantzoukas, Zachary Quinto, Maharsha Ali, Kevin Michael Richardson, Greg Griffin, Kari Payton, and so many more voices involved in this series. What did you feel overall about the heavyweight cast, the animation, the storylines, the way they adapted this story to an animated series?
Well, I mean, I don't know if our audience remembers. I'm sure they do. But, like, I was the one that had not read about it. And leading up to its release, all the marketing materials, I was like, okay, this looks very generic superhero-y. You know, I know you guys have said, like, there are a big twist coming, and that's why the marketing is so kind of straightforward, is because you don't want to kind of tip your hand to those big twists that were coming. And within the first two episodes, by the end of the season, I still wasn't a fan of the animation. Like, I was like, this just doesn't click for me. And granted, I'm not the animation guy that Vogel is. I mean, he's much more learned when it comes to this stuff. But I mean, I just know that some of the character designs, I'm like, it does not please my eyeballs. That being said, the storytelling is dynamite. Once I got past those first two episodes and you start to kind of peel the layers and get to what the story is really about, and you get to know more of your supporting cast as well and their stories, especially Kevin Michael Richardson and the Mahler brothers. I mean, he's dynamite. I mean, I was lucky to work with him on a project, and aside from just being a really, really good guy, he is magical behind the microphone. Like, he sits down and he can just bring these characters to life with his voice. The storytelling was outstanding. The performances, top to bottom, were outstanding. I'm not always the biggest Jason Mantzoukas fan, but in this, I thought he was outstanding. Gillian Jacobs, Zazie Beetz, I mean, I thought they were all doing such good work. And by the end, when I saw the ultimate twist of the first season, I was kind of like, oh, okay, so that's why you cut those trailers the way you did, because you didn't want to give the audience who wasn't aware of the property or wasn't intimately acquainted with the property, you didn't want to give them an idea of what was coming, because the storytelling is so good. You get so emotionally invested in Mark's story. I mean, I'm really excited to see what happens with season two and season three, even though the animation is maybe not my cup of tea.
Wow, strong statement about the animation. Okay,
it's interesting to me. I'm actually just curious, and we can have this further conversation offline. But to me, what I liked about the animation is, because I know that you're a fan of the DC animated movies, because we just went through and watched a bunch of them. And to me, Invincible is a slightly higher production value version of those DC animated movies. I think it's the similar style or a similar animation quality to the DC animated films, just like up-leveled a little bit. So it's interesting that like, because I know you like those and that this one didn't. I wonder if it's like the character designs or what it is that wasn't quite pleasing to your eye.
Part of it is the character designs. I feel like Debbie's design is really hard to get into. Like, I don't know. It's just, for some reason, I was like, you know, I hear the wonderful voice of, you know, Sandra Oh, and I'm kind of like, this character just doesn't look right to me. And I think maybe the difference between Invincible and the DC, the animated films, and I think you guys had said this was deliberate, is the brightness, the difference in the brightness. I mean, Invincible is so bright, whereas the DC films tend to be a little darker and might be able to, at least for my eyes, hide those character designs that I may not be the biggest fan of.
Okay. Well,
Well, I'll say this. I absolutely loved it. I thought the first season was stellar. I was completely engrossed in this story. And of course, I had read it and was interested to see how they turned things around, how they twisted, how they'd move events. And having that huge reveal in the first episode was a massive shock. I thought they would build up to it, but I thought it was brilliant. Just like when they adapted The Boys on Amazon Prime as well, I think they kind of really maneuvered some of the storylines, some of the story beats, some of the big moments in the comics, and also, you know, took away some of the other unsavory stuff and made it work really well. I thought they did the same thing here. I didn't have a problem with the animation. I liked it, like the animation, but again, my eye is not the animation eye, but I certainly enjoyed it. And I loved the voiceover acting, loved the storylines. Walton Goggins and Kevin Michael Richardson really were the standouts for me. Although Steven Yeun in that finale is doing some stellar effing acting throughout that finale. So
He's doing the Lord's work. He's doing the Lord's work in that
that's
episode.
Fair. He is doing the Lord's work. But throughout every and I loved the storylines here with Zazie Beetz and Gillian Jacobs, this kind of faux possible love triangle that really kind of settles itself out as the season goes along. There's certainly shades of Peter Parker and Spider-Man. You can't escape that, you know, with Mary Jane, you know, that idea of Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy there with Peter Parker, the dad stuff. All of that here. So it's an interesting father-son story as well that really takes some incredibly extreme turns. And Clancy Brown as Damian Darkblood, just stellar stuff as well. So throughout, I was engrossed in the storylines. Did sometimes his best friend get a little irritating? I didn't want to see more of him. Yes.
But, here comes the homophobia.
No.
Here it comes.
I love the gay people. I just thought it was but that episode with him, with him and the guy that he's got the crush on and all of that, D.A. Sinclair, I thought that was an excellent episode, a great way to portray, like, the gay point of view, as we've seen so many times, the hetero point of view of looking at someone's features and being in love with them and having a thing for them and then using that to kind of bring them out of whatever spell they're in. I thought that was a great episode, but sometimes it got a little on my nerves. But it's a little to hear that. I hear you on Debbie, Shannon, a little bit, and you're not the only one. Some of the other reviews that I've read over the last few weeks have commented on the animation being both good and bad. I've seen that, but I personally had no problem with the animation. Maybe because I was seasoned by the comic book, I expected that look, so I had no problem, and I like the idea of bright animation to juxtapose the really dark shit we got throughout this season of Invincible. So for me, overall.
Well, Mikey, I also think, to be fair to the Debbie criticisms, Debbie suffers from a problem that you commonly get into when you're animating a big action superhero series, yeah, which is whether you're using one studio or you're using several different studios, which is very common, you usually have like your A team, your B team, your C team, and you're gonna put your A team on your big action. Like when you have these huge epic city spanning action sequences, your A team gets those. And oftentimes, which sucks, when you get like a nice quiet scene at home where there's fewer characters and fewer shots and it's kind of like a simpler animation style where you just want to focus on the acting, sometimes you get your B and your C team. So I think Debbie maybe suffered a little bit from, she never got to be in the big action sequence. Like with Nolan and with Invincible and with a lot of the other heroes, you know, you might have them in a quieter scene, but then you're going to go see them do awesome action and do some amazing shit. So your mind kind of blends the really good animation and the less good animation. And Debbie maybe tended to be more, I don't know this for sure, but Debbie maybe tended to be more often on the teams that were not doing, not going all out with the animation, with the pencil mileage.
It's interesting that you say that, because the three characters, like Debbie was the most extreme example. The other two characters were Cecil, Walton Goggins' character, but because he had that scarring, it's kind of like, okay, you can kind of justify that. But I also thought Adam Eve, in her scenes where it wasn't the action, like, when she's, you know, she's off living by herself in the the treehouse. There were times that it felt like her design was just a little jagged for me.
Okay. I could walk you through 2D Disney movies, like Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, and it will drive me crazy because depending on which scene and who was working on it, like, oh, this character's a little bit off model here, more off model here, the acting is amazing in this moment, but less good in this moment. And I think that's true. I think I sort of just chalk that up to that's the process. So I sort of look at it as I grade on the curve of like what was the full season, the amazing animation and the less good. But I think picking out those characters that you're picking out, it does seem to be like an ABC team situation.
And certainly Omni-Man got a lot of love after that finale because he was all over the meme universe, and Boss Logic did a lot of work on that end. So certainly that character design seemed like a number of people. But let's give some credit out of here to the creators here, Robert Kirkman, Ryan Ottley, and Corey Walker. Kirkman is executive producer. For those of you who may not know who Robert Kirkman is, but you've been under a rock. The Walking Dead, that's his baby as well. He wrote the first episode. Then there was Corey Walker. He's the show's lead character designer. So maybe you want to send your strongly worded letter, Shannon, to him. And Ryan Ottley, who drew a majority of the books run, was a creative consultant on this. So this, I'm going to ask you, Mike, this is a rarity when the people involved in the comic book actually are the people who do the animated series. Am I correct on that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, look, Invincible's been shopped around forever. I think I said on one of our previous episodes, you know, for a while I met with Robert Kirkman and the Circle of Confusion team about trying to get it at Sony Television and then again at Hasbro. And I've never been happier in my life that I failed to succeed at something, because neither of those would have been what we got to see on Amazon. But they've been shopping it around for a while, and credit to them that they were really firm on this is the creative team. This is what this show is going to be, because there's a thousand ways that this show could have fallen into a different showrunner's hands, a different animation style. I mean, look, Shannon's criticisms aside, which are 1,000% valid, they went out of their way to make sure that every character in this show looks the way they do on that comic book page.
Yes.
And maybe that's less successful for some characters in the jump from a still image to full animation, but it, like, if you're a fan of this comic, you are getting 100% that on screen, which, to your point, John, is 100% a rarity. And I hope that we see more of that. I hope that people realize that taking these creative teams, surrounding them with other talented people and letting them do it is really the way to go.
Yeah. And speaking of other talented people, the writers included all three of those gentlemen I just mentioned: Simon Rakiopa, I hope I'm saying that right, Chris Black, Curtis Gwynn, Christine Lavoff, and Ryan Ridley were involved with this. Animation director was Hao Young Jun, who worked on shows like Avatar: The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, and Voltron. And the casting director for this, Linda LaMontagne, certainly deserves a lot of credit for her directing here of these incredible actors for these roles. And one more name here, Joaquin Dos Santos, is among the opening episode storyboard artists, and he is working. He's worked on Just League Unlimited, and he's going to be working on he's directing the Spider-Verse sequel. So what a jump from being a storyboard artist to directing a sequel.
He was also one of the leads on Voltron, and I've been a fan of Joaquin's for a long time. You can go back and watch some of the old Justice League Unlimited episodes, and some of the best action episodes in that run were directed by Joaquin Dos Santos. Like, he's been around for a long time, and his boarding, when you look at some of the best moments of Justice League Unlimited, Avatar, Legend of Korra, and Voltron, which...
Yeah.
As an arc, have some of the best action animation on TV, you will usually find his name there.
Yep, he worked on the Guardians of the Globe sequence, and Omni-Man ripped them to pieces in that first episode as well. And one last thing, these episodes directed by Jeff Allen, who did 8 of them, Paul Firminger did 2, and Robert Alley did 1 of them. All right, let's break this thing down here. Let's start with storylines. Let's start with the big one, Mark and his dad. Okay, let's talk about that right here as we jump into this whole situation. Mark and Nolan, Omni-Man and Invincible. Gentlemen, Shannon, I'll start with you first. I'll start with Michael for the overall thoughts on this. What did you think about the father-son storyline throughout this series? Did you think, as someone who hadn't read the comics, all the twists and turns that they laid out through these 8 episodes to that incredible finale, what did you think about how they built this out? And did it change your mind as you looked at it after that finale about how Omni-Man was kind of being a toxic masculine father with Mark?
Oh, I mean, I think this would be toxic masculinity would be the most drastic of understatements ever.
Fair enough.
In response to that character's journey. I mean, it's funny, like, you know, that first episode where Mark throws the garbage over the dumpster, and Omni-Man, Nolan starts training him. And that first time that he, and I know we talked about it in our initial, like, our review of the first 2 episodes, when he gives him that slug to the gut, heartbreaking, heartbreaking. Yeah. Like I never, like I know stories of fathers and sons having that kind of come to Jesus moment of like, okay, are we doing this? Like I never had that moment with my dad. My dad was always like a very laid back guy. Mm-hmm. But just watching dad, hurt, deliberately hurt his child, in the guise of this is for your good, like this is, you're gonna have to deal with this, but really once you get to the end, it's like, okay, how much can he take, because he's right. only half me, he's also half this weak species. Mm-hmm. really fascinating. And in the episode where Mark is working with Mahershala Ali's character, and they have that Titan. They have that huge, huge fight at the top mm-hmm. of that building, and you're watching the Guardians of the Globe and Mark just get worked, and Omni-Man is just hovering there watching, mm-hmm. not willing to help. And again, it's kind of like, okay, what is he? It's at that point in the series, it's, is he doing this for his good? Like you shouldn't have come here, or is it, okay, how much can he take? It was just a fascinating, fascinating dynamic between the two of them. And then when you throw Sandra Oh in yeah. as well, especially that moment early, like in the second episode where she's telling Mark to go inside and says, make me. And it's just like that, mm-hmm. that shittiness that a teenager has when you realize, oh, you physically can't make me do anything anymore. I mean, just, yeah, it was so, so well done. And again, not having read the comic, I'd be curious to see what the time span was for this to be laid out versus the 8 episodes that we got.
Yeah, Michael, I mean, as someone who has read the comic, please take it away from there. Also throwing in, as you mentioned, the Debbie situation, Shannon, of course, but also this is a teen who is coming into his own as well, who's rushing to grow up and then realizes once he does grow up what the consequences of that stuff is. You tell me, Mike, what did you think about how they handled the series versus how they handled it in the comic book?
Well, it's interesting. So to one of the things Shannon was talking about the character design, but I think that this applies kind of overall to everything, and then I could talk about how it applies to Omni-Man and Mark specifically, is the comic, when it came out, it very much was, this is a bright, shiny, simply designed comic book. Mm. Like, the character design was very simple. The outfits are all bright primary colors. To Shannon's point, it's not dark at all. Like, it is the brightest that it can be. And one of the big issues, not issues, but I was talking to a friend of mine who didn't really love the comic when it came out, because for the first 11 issues, it's about a kid whose dad is basically Superman and he's learning to be a superhero. And they poke fun at the superhero conventions a little bit, but it's basically a kid who's learning to be a hero and fly around and save the day and fight some aliens. And it's kind of just a fun superhero romp. But to your point, John, it's a little bit Peter Parker. It's a little bit My Dad is Superman. It's a little bit Justice League is the Guardians of the Globe or the Justice League. Right. And it was like, okay, I get what this is, but it's not doing anything super different. As a comic book fan, I'm enjoying it, but it's not anything special. And then they are about to get canceled. Kirkman's talked about this in several interviews.
Really?
Like Invincible was like, yeah, it's not doing great. And then issue 12 came out and Nolan killed the entire Guardians of the Globe. And everyone was like, oh, what the fuck? And so I think and from that point on, Invincible really became this thing where they had lulled you into a sense of this is a nice, primary colored, bright superhero world, and then said, oh, by the way, nothing's that simple. It's really complicated. Now, what they did with the show, which is super, super smart, is they took the complicated thing, Nolan killing the Guardians of the Globe, and brought it all the way to the end of the first episode. So now, even though each episode is Mark not knowing about this, and he's still kind of having the fun, we still see the fun of this primary colored superhero universe. We already know from the very beginning that there's a dark underbelly. We saw something at the end of the first episode that we were like, whoa, I was not expecting that level of violence. What the fuck is going on? So by doing that, they managed to sort of take the tone of Invincible as you got into further episodes and kind of bring it into the very beginning, where as even though Mark is still having a blast and he's meeting the team and it's like, this is all kind of fun and the threats don't seem that bad and he's so strong that nothing can really hurt him, there's just this underbelly of like, oh, this feels like things are not going to end up as simple as they seem to be. And I think the stuff with his dad, to Nolan and Mark's relationship is 100% that, is because we saw what Nolan did at the end of the first episode. If we hadn't seen that, we would have been like, okay, so this is basically Superman training his son to be Superman. Yeah. But everything he does, we're like, what is his real deal? Yeah. And in a lot of ways, just like we've talked about this with Agatha Harkness in WandaVision, we've talked about this a little bit with Zemo in the Falcon and Winter Soldier reviews, even though Omni-Man is doing what he's doing for maybe not the right reasons, he is teaching Mark some valuable lessons. Everything he says when he punches him super hard in the beginning and says, this is what it means to be me. Like, this is what you have to be able to go. You have to be this tough. Like, he's saying it because he's like, you're a Viltrumite and we have a lot of stuff to do. But for the journey that Mark's going to go on, those are lessons that are going to be valuable to him. And so having that super complicated relationship, you know, you get to the end of episode 8 and Mark is just there, you know, bleeding from the mouth. And Omni-Man is like, who will you have 500 years from now? And he's like, I would have you. Yeah. Like, having that kind of complicated relationship where you're the guy that's taught me everything about being me. You're my dad. And also, you're now everything that I hate about myself, but you've also taught me the things that are good. I don't know how I feel. That's what makes the show complicated. And that's just in that. But you can take every single thing and every single issue that we're used to with the superhero universe and see how already Invincible is peeling it back and being like, yeah, none of this is as complicated as it is. None of this is as uncomplicated as it is in your other superhero stories.
Yeah, those are excellent points you bring up, Mike. Absolutely, I think so too. It's such a conventional yet unconventional father-son storyline for sure. How many people watching, if they're actually being honest about their dads, have had dads like that? I remember when I was a kid growing up, I don't know, I was in a Boy Scout meeting when I was 8, 9 years old, or 10 years old probably, and I saw this kid mouth off to his dad in front of people, and his dad chased him down in the gymnasium, the elementary school gymnasium we're meeting on, and he beat him with his boot, his cowboy boot. He beat him in front of everybody, then made him walk back to join the group while he was crying. And it was his way of saying, you're going to respect me and you're going to toughen up. And I was like, my God. And this is the stuff that you see here in this relationship. But you're right. And it's very similar to what we got with that film with J.K. Simmons. Why can't I think of it? Directed by Damien Chazelle.
Whiplash.
It's so similar to Whiplash, the complicated relationship, the mentor slash father figure with the kid who's learning how to actually bring out his best. And in retrospect, you can say, well, this is him, as you said, Shannon, testing him, because just in case Mark doesn't want to go along with his plan at the end of this thing, he's going to have to fight him and he's going to have to know what his weaknesses are and how much he can actually take. So certainly we see that. A very complicated relationship. I do like Debbie getting her own agency of investing in this. This could have been an easily written character that just goes off and is the superhero's wife. There's much more complexity throughout this series that I really enjoyed in Sandra Oh's performance as well, in what she's doing, her own investigations, her own snapping at Nolan, her own like calling him out, all of that. And yet we still get, like you said, Michael, a complicated relationship because she senses there's something worse here. And even at the end, when he is showing who he is, she still wants Cecil to call off the dogs, to not have him killed, to not. So there's still love there, even though Omni-Man is completely off his rocker here, or doing what he's been programmed to do, in essence.
I think the women definitely get a better... They're more developed in the series than they were in the comic. Adam Eve was always pretty great, but I think both Debbie and Amber, Zazie Beetz' character, both get a lot more to do and are way more essential to the bigger story than they were in the original comic book run. I think they both smartly, they were like, let's actually give them more agency. Let's develop these stories out a little more. And I think that also made the show stronger.
One of the things that I really loved about Sandra Oh's performance, and I feel like this is a lot of just moms are smart.
Yes.
Like, it's really hard to pull one over on a mom. And then you see that also apply to Nolan, because you see, like obviously he's incredibly powerful. It took a team of superheroes to make him bleed, essentially. Mm. But you see how Debbie does not back down from him. And then when she's the one who ends up getting his uniform, his costume, mm-hmm. and you just see like, oh, he's incredibly powerful, but you can tell she's probably smarter than he is.
Yeah.
And anytime, I mean, this has nothing to do with Debbie, but it just made me think about when you said Whiplash, John.
Yeah.
Anytime Omni-Man is teaching Mark a lesson, I hear not quite my tempo.
Not my tempo.
In my head. I kept waiting for that moment. Not quite my tempo.
What the hell are you doing, man? Yeah, that's what you want to hear. That's what you want to hear, for sure. Let's bring up the two, as you mentioned here, Michael, let's bring up Amber and Adam Eve and the relationship with Mark. I thought this was fantastically done. You know, I thought Zazie Beetz just growing in all the things that she can do. It's so great to hear Gillian Jacobs again, especially after I've done a recent Community rewatch a few weeks ago. It was great to see both of them and the different journeys that they're all on. The only thing that I didn't like was the reveal that Amber knew the whole time it was a superhero. It seemed to make her anger in other episodes lose their way completely if she knew the guy was a superhero for quite some time. So I thought that was the only moment that seemed to be mishandled in this entire triangle. What did you think about this throughout the whole episodes?
So I think that so Amber, like, I mean, they changed her ethnicity. They gave her, yes, a much bigger role. They gave her a much more complicated and nuanced relationship with Mark. So I think it was a little bit, I will admit to you, yes, it was a little bit of a cheat, but I kind of liked it. Like, if she had, if they had on the college campus, if she had pulled the Mark, I know that you were the guy, I'm just, right, pissed you're not telling me, that would have been more realistic, but it would have tipped their hand. And I think that what they played, which was interesting, is we are so used, again, this is the bigger, let's set up a typical comic book situation and then turn it on its head a little bit. The typical, yeah, comic book situation is, I'm mad because you're supposed to be my boyfriend, but you're always running off and you need to pay attention to me. And then the guy comes in and says, yeah, but I'm a hero. And she goes, oh my God, that's amazing. I love you. And that's what Mark thought was going to happen. Mark thought he was going to come in and say, hey, so like, I'm invincible. And she would have been like, oh, now it all makes sense and you're great. And she said something which is accurate and I think, yeah, is justified, which is, I figured that out a while, dummy. You have been lying to my face. How are we supposed to have an honest relationship? This is a huge part of your life. You're not going to tell me. And I think they dealt with the reality of that situation in a surprising way. Like, had she, like, the fact that she was like, yeah, I'm not an idiot, dude. Like, that, I get it, but you literally lie to me every minute of every day and I'm tired of it. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Valid.
Right. How about Adam Eve in her journey? We'll get to Shannon. Have your response to that for real quick.
Sorry.
Oh, I think we got his response.
Yeah. Especially when, yeah. And we'll get to that, but now what about Adam Eve, Mike? I mean, we saw her progression as well. Not only her relation with Mark, but her relation with her parents and, you know, kind of going toe to toe. Well, shout out to Fred Tatasciore, who played her dad, but you get that back and forth. And then she goes and builds herself a treehouse. She is going on her own journey within the journey that everyone else is going on, Invincible. I thought that was great as well.
Yeah, and I think, well, and I think Adam Eve is interesting because, again, normally in a typical superhero, in the classic superhero world we usually inhabit, to your point, you brought up Mary Jane Watson and Gwen Stacy.
Yeah,
the girls are always the bystanders. And so having Mark step into this superhero world, and one of the first people he meets in costume is another girl from high school who is a hero. And so, yeah, that relationship is different because this isn't he's got the Amber relationship over here, which is the typical, I have to hide who I am from you. But then he's got this other person who's like, oh, you can show me the ropes. Like when she was like, oh, did you puke? Yeah, I puked the first time. Like she is a more experienced hero than him. And beyond that, given her own arc separate from Mark, is her figuring out the kind of hero she wants to be. And I think this is, as we get into season 2 and 3, you're going to see this over and over, is that she realizes, and she says to Mark, when she goes off on her own and builds that treehouse and is out doing good, she helps more people in a few days than she does punching a bunch of super-powered assholes in the middle of a city. And this is an idea that Invincible is going to touch on again and again and again, which is, if you really had a world where people have these levels of powers, there's a lot of other things they could do than punching a giant dragon that are going to be better for the world. And Adam Eve already starting to go on that journey, I think is really interesting and something we're going to see more of.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly that's in the comic as well, the idea of violence and how that changes Mark, especially after this finale, what he experiences with his father, how that changes him and how that affects everyone else around. And of course, Robert Kirkman's so great at presenting a premise, then evolving the characters and having them challenge you as the reader or the viewer to see where you stand with them and if it relates to your own life and your own journey and your own evolution on your points of views on things. It's fascinating stuff they do here. Shannon, all right, comments already on Amber and on Adam Eve, please go ahead.
So Adam, the great thing about both characters to me is these are two examples of people that are just good.
Yeah.
And they're also teenagers. So I think that speaks to a lot for both of the characters. I loved Adam Eve. I mean, I love that, you know, she once she realized that Rex Blode was you know, having a thing behind her back, like she removed herself from the situation. She realized that Mark liked Amber, she removed herself from the situation. It was just, I'll be really curious to see her journey if she stays on this path of just being good. To the Amber of it all. Now, I would say for the most part, like, yeah, she was absolutely, this is a good character. She helps out at a shelter. She just seems like a good person. By the end, I wouldn't say it was mishandled, but what I would say is, you know, Invincible is doing this for your protection.
And the
fact that you're pulling... It is the pettiness of a teenager, which completely tracks that she's like, I'm mad at you. We're supposed to be this committed couple, yet you keep things from me. And it's like, you could get killed if you knew everything. So I was not expecting for her to be like, yeah, I know that you're invincible. It does make me laugh. Like, and I think the Green Lantern movie, for all of its problems, it's the one movie that has sort of identified the, yes, I know who you are just because you cover your cheekbones. That doesn't disguise your identity. The fact that Mark's got his hair out, you've got his jawline. It's like, well, yeah, I can tell you're not wearing the Spider-Man mask. You're not even wearing the Batman mask. Like, I can tell who you are. But
His best friend couldn't. So
until the end or near the end.
He was too busy ogling college guys.
Oh boy.
To really pay attention. But I mean, I thought the journeys were both really, really interesting. Like, I didn't think it was out of character for her to do what she did. I think, again, that speaks to the pettiness of a teenager to be like, well, you know, we're not supposed to keep anything from each other. You've been lying to me. And it's just like, he's been saving people. Get off your high horse, Amber.
Wow. All right. Well, there's your thoughts, man. We only have a limited time to discuss things. We're already at 35 minutes. You both said your points. I think the fans will know which side they want to be on for sure. Let's move on to an overall. next thing. Let's talk about the new Guardians of the Globe. Certainly, we had the original Guardians of the Globe. That was such a brutal scene. And we'll talk about the gore, or at least touch on the gore. But what did you think about the new Guardians of the Globe and their journey throughout this? Jason Mantzoukas, of course, playing Rex Blood, who apparently everybody wants to bang, duplicate, played by Malice Robot. I think Zachary Quinto, this may be his best stuff since Star Trek, in my opinion. I thought he was fantastic in this. You did have Adam Eve as well. Kari Payton, friend of the show, Kari Payton as Black Samson as well. What did you guys think about all of this throughout the series and their journey as they came together as a team?
Yeah, super enjoyable. I mean, again, it's like when you get far enough down the road of a story that you can start paying attention, you can start giving your supporting characters some life. I love the fact that Black Samson lost his powers. Now he uses his suit. Rex Blode, kind of a dick, kind of an asshole, but ultimately does want to do the right thing when you're in an emergency. Monster Girl, her relationship with Robot, I was like, oh my gosh, like I've never this take that every time she changes, her real self keeps, like, she's got a Benjamin Button thing on. She keeps getting younger. I was like, oh my God, this is so this is so compelling. And then to see Robot's arc of how he connects with her and he's like, you know, I don't, you know, you find out who Robot actually is. And yeah, everything about the new Guardians of the Globe, like, it was just so enjoyable. And agree with you, John. I mean, Zachary Quinto, like, I loved him as Spock. I've seen him in other stuff where I'm like, maybe not his strongest work. I think he's knocking it out of the park right now as Robot.
Yeah, stellar. Guardians of the Globe? Is he frozen? No, he's good. Okay. Why do you think how they handled Guardians of the Globe throughout? And talk to me. What is the attraction to Rexplode? I mean, Duplicate, Adam, Eve, and Monster Girl all wanted to get with him. So you tell me. I mean, because I mean, Robot changes himself to kind of look like a younger version of Rexplode. Explain it.
Listen. I will tell you. I you know what though? I'm right with him. Like I'm like, oh god, Rexplode's such a dick. I'm like, I would probably hook up with Rexplode.
Wow.
Like, I would probably do it. Like I was I had this whole conversation with somebody where I was like, man, he's such a dick, but there's something about him. I've had more conversations than I should about which comic book and animated characters I would hook up with. There's an entire list.
Fair enough.
I'm not. There's some that I'm proud of. There's some that I'm like, that would be my guy. Rexplode, yeah. Not proud about it, but I could see it happening. It could happen. I think it's great. I think that, you know, what I enjoy about this show is, for Shannon, he's meeting all these characters for the first time.
Yeah, right.
And they do such a good job, like I said, of taking, like, the idea of multiple man, but, like, giving you Duplicate and doing some different things with it. Giving you the idea of the Hulk, but doing a little tweak with Monster Girl that makes it unique and different. And Invincible does this so well throughout, like, giving you something that is, I know this from comics, but I never thought about it in quite this way. Mm. And what's fun for Shannon is he's meeting all these characters for the first time, and he's like, oh, there's a lot of potential here. What's fun for me is as soon as any of these characters are showing up on screen, I'm like, I know where this character or this character or this relationship is gonna go, right. And watching them get everything right. Because, like, you know, it all gets changed around a little bit. Some stuff is streamlined. Some stuff is moved around like we talked about. But the overall gist of these characters and the little seeds that they're planting with certain characters that you know that that's going to bear fruit in season 2 and season 3, they're doing it all right. And I was when I heard it was going to be 8 episodes, I wouldn't say concerned, but I think I probably had an assumption that mm-hmm. some of these storylines of these secondary characters or some of these secondary characters altogether might get moved or brought in later to focus on the Omni-Man, Mark, Debbie story. Yeah. And it's been really, really delightful to see the way that they have managed to pack so much in. We talk a lot about Falcon and Winter Soldier's 6 episodes and how sometimes it felt like they dragged some storylines and didn't make enough room for other things that we would have liked to have seen. And I think Invincible just shows you how much you can really pack in there. I mean, that cast is ginormous. And yeah. As you know from that final beat in the finale, in the 8th episode, which we'll talk about, they've set up like 5 or 6 storylines that are going to keep going on.
Yeah. And let's move forward now to the Global Defense Agency and Cecil Stedman. Talk to me, swing back to you, Michael. Talk to me about Cecil Stedman and how Walton Goggins did his journey with his character throughout his relationship with Damian Darkblood as well, and trying to kind of circumvent that investigation. What did you think overall about how they transferred Cecil Stedman from the page to the animated series?
I mean, Cecil's great. I mean, Cecil's just a great, interesting character. And just the way that they play the government stuff. This is a world where the government is, you know, we talk a lot about, again, with Marvel, we talk about the Sokovia Accords and the Avengers are over here and the government is over here and whatever. This is a world where the government is not just working with the heroes, but fully funding the heroes and covering up things for the heroes. And kind of that's what allows the heroes to live the lives that they lead. But for all that being said, the government is definitely doing their own thing as well. And Cecil walks this fine line between you like him and he's fun and he's cool, but you're also like, do I 1,000% trust you? Like, do I real? Like, when he takes Mark into that room at the end with the white light and he's like, let me show you briefly a bunch of shit that we're doing. And just even the idea, you know, and they got to this really quick, but you know, you have that episode where Mark and Amber and William go to the college campus.
Right.
Crazy dude is experimenting on people. Cecil and the government come in and they're like, all right, we're going to take care of all this. And the next thing you see is the government has that guy working and building him an army of those guys. And you're like, yeah. And again, it's the thing, but it's the thing that I keep coming back to is they've purposely given you this primary colored, bright superhero universe. And visually they're like, see, we're fun superheroes. And every single choice that they make says, by the way, this is really more complicated than you would think it would be. And that's just in season one. And if they continue on the track that they're doing, it's going to get worse and worse.
Yeah. Shannon, thoughts on Cecil Stedman and the Global Defense Agency?
Yeah, awesome. Like, I think I wrote Vogel at one point. I texted him, be like, you know, Cecil got to cut that hair, man. It's like, if you have massive scarring on your face and you're losing, you know, the battle on top with keeping your hair, maybe don't grow it out. I don't know if that was to distract from the scars. Wow.
It's like he needs a little queer eye for the government guy. Like, that's what he needs.
But as a character, just absolutely fascinating. I mean, it's sort of like the coolest parts of Amanda Waller are with this guy. And Walton Goggins' performance, not that I've seen everything he's in, but I've seen a lot of it, and he tends to play Southern almost always. To hear him not playing Southern, like, at first I was kind of like, I recognize that voice, and I had to look it up, and I'm like, oh my God, that's Walton Goggins. He's doing dynamite work, and he just has such an interesting arc from Mark's point of view that is like, he starts as this government guy that, like, I don't know if we can trust this guy. You get to the end and you see, like, oh, this is actually a compassionate guy, and I still don't know if we can trust you. I mean, he's such a fun character to watch. And Damian Darkblood as well. Oh. Easily my second favorite character. Like, a little bit of Etrigan, a little bit of Hellboy.
Yeah.
Certainly hope that we get to see him again. Obviously, you guys know this. I
and
don't.
Some Columbo. And some Columbo.
And a little Columbo. But, well, yeah, I mean, they were, like, Clancy Brown and Walton Goggins are both just doing awesome work in this.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, like, to your point, I mean, Cecil falls into that category of, like, it again, it's the reality of, if we had a world with superheroes, yeah, the government would do what they're doing and, like, want to, like, take care of them, and these guys are our first line of defense, and we need to make sure, we need to patch them up when they're busted up and everything. Like, and also, you also need to be ready to do what you need to do if they're going to go bad. So Cecil kind of goes beyond good or bad and gets more into a what's good for humans in a post-humanity world. And that's going to be to Mark's benefit sometimes, and it's going to probably be to Mark's detriment at sometimes. And that's going to be another, again, like, just as we talked about this super complicated relationship that Mark has with his dad, his dad's now gone and Cecil's stepping in, and that's going to be an equally complicated relationship for him to navigate.
I imagine not all superheroes wear capes, like they say. I mean, in a way, he's kind of a hero as well, a more practical hero, a more rational hero, a human hero, because he doesn't have superpowers to rely on. He has to use his intelligence, his knowledge, his connection to things. And he's always so, and I can say this as well, and Shani, you bring up excellent points. You know, we've seen Walton Goggins, we've seen Clancy Brown. You bring up Green Lantern, he voiced the villain in Green Lantern. Like, we've seen them play these out there characters or these deep Southern characters like Shawshank Redemption or whatever. These are two of the most restrained yet really powerful performances from both of these guys voiceover wise that I thought was excellent to listen to and watch throughout the season for sure.
You want to give a shout out to the voiceover, because a lot of times when you have a show that, like, brings in the big celebrity voices, that brings in the heat, you kind of sometimes overlook the amazing voiceover talent that works in the industry that's doing it every single day. This show really just had, just down the line, you had you had the Sandra Ohs, the J.K. Simmons, Mahershala Ali's, you had, like, these big, big names coming in, but then at the same times, you had the Kevin Michael Richardsons and the Kari Paytons and the Clancy Browns and the Grey Delisles, and you really just had such a wonderful, wonderful blend of, Fred Tatasciore, like, you had a wonderful blend of people who have been doing this for a living for years and have just been killing it over and over and over again, and other people who we know from more of the live action landscape who are coming in and also doing equally amazing work. So I think that, like, they really had such a lovely blend and gave everybody their chance to shine.
Yeah, and even in that first episode, you got people like Sonequa Martin-Green, Lenny James, Michael Dorn, who got, like, you know, kind of tore to pieces. So they were able to come in and do, like, one episode and then roll on out of here, except for the Immortal, who got to come back for sure, but only for a brief amount of time.
It's in the name. It's in the name.
He was ripped in half, yeah. Let's touch on that a little bit before we got to wrap up here in just a little bit. But how about the overall violence in the show? Did you think it was too much? Did you think it was just the right amount? And touching on the finale as well, that was really probably the most violent of all the episodes. What did you think overall about how they handled this? There were heads being split open, bodies being ripped in half, blood everywhere, blood on costumes. Shout out to Mark Hamill as well, voiceover wise. What did you guys think about all of how they handled the gore throughout the series?
I mean, it seemed like they handled it correctly. I mean, I think, you know, you get that warning at the beginning, yeah, saying, you know, what you're about to watch is X, Y, and Z. So you assume that it is going to be bloody. It is going to be gory. But then, you know, they kind of set that bar with episode one with Omni-Man taking on the Guardians of the Globe. I mean, when I think it was it Red Rush, the Russian speedster?
Oh, yeah.
The moment that he kind of squishes his head and you actually see the eyeballs, his eyeballs bolt out. It's like, yeah. Oh, okay. So that's what this show is going to be. And it's kind of shocking at first, but then once you get down the storytelling road a little bit and you do become so invested in these characters as Omni-Man is just pummeling Mark.
Yeah.
You know, your heart, you're so on Mark's side, and it's so, even though this, you know, this is not real, this is ink, and it just rips your heart out. And that he kind of does a little bit of a wishbone, it is so affecting. And I don't know, is the Immortal coming back?
He's called the Immortal. That's all I'll say. Michael, what did you think overall how they handled the gorier comic to animated series?
I mean, I think it's definitely gorier seeing it in animation than anything that you can do in a still image. And look, here's my feeling about it. I am not a fan of violence just for violence sake. Like, I, you know, whether it be in animation or live action, if something is just like super violent to be like, look how gory we can be, I kind of get bored, or I kind of think it's a little like gratuitous or over the top. But if there's a reason for it, I think it can be really affecting. And I think with Invincible, they use the violence very clearly on purpose as the counterpoint to the bright and shiny, colorful superhero world that they present you with. Like, by having this world that we are so used to seeing in, like, how many animated superhero shows do we watch? I mean, we all grew up watching X-Men, 90s X-Men, 90s Spider-Man, you know, Young Justice, like, pick your show. Yeah. And we've seen these epic superhero brawls that we love. Like, we were just talking about Joaquin Dos Santos' work on Justice League Unlimited. Right, but much as we've seen amazing superhero battles, they never go as far as they would realistically go when buildings are falling down and two superpowered beings are punching the shit out of each other. And Invincible just presents a premise that says, this is what it would look like.
Right.
Let's deal with this for a minute. And what does that mean to a teenage superhero who's stepping into this world and is instantly exposed to that level of violence? Right. And everything that they do as far as showing you this graphic violence. And, you know, you just talk about the season finale. And I mean, when Omni-Man holds Mark's face up to that subway train and uses Mark to just brutally kill a train full of people, and you just see the blood and guts everywhere, and Mark is drenched in blood.
Yeah,
I'm sure that there are people out there that feel like that's uncalled for in an animated series and that it's gratuitous, but I think that's the point. And I think that Mark dealing with that kind of trauma and deciding what kind of hero he's going to be is what the show is about. So I found it really, really affecting. Like, and I do think that by letting it be that violent, like, you're, to Shannon's point, your heart just goes out to Mark. Like, you are just like, that is rough. And watching a superhero have to heal for 2 weeks because he got the shit kicked out of him so bad, that's also something we're not used to seeing. And I think it's good to see it.
Yeah, agreed. It reminded me that final with the subway train, that visually, of course, we'd seen a couple, but visually, it reminded me a lot of Hard Boiled, the old Frank Miller, Jeff Darrow comic book. If people haven't read that one, you should totally read that one. They have the images there, the body parts flying everywhere, blood and all that kind of stuff. Really felt kind of a reminiscent of that as well. All right, we got a few minutes here, and let's wrap up. Overall, we get to that finale, get a lot of stuff revealed. The Viltrumite stuff gets revealed. Nolan calls his wife basically a pet, or I mean, like, wow, it was so insane. How far, I mean, how far down the rabbit hole he goes into evil. And of course, it was kind of previewed, I think, the third episode where he goes through that portal to tell them, you're not coming back here anymore, you know, and it was all red and he destroyed that entire species, civilization, actually, and then comes on back. You got that sense there. And then all of that being revealed in that eighth episode to show, yeah, the whole time he was this guy who was going to essentially rule the earth with Viltrumite. What did you guys think now that this has happened? Where do we go from here? What did you think about that reveal in the finale? Michael?
I mean, look, yes, first of all, just Nolan's disdain for humanity. I mean, just his Ooh. Attitude towards humanity is brutal. But again, an alien race like that, like, that's also realistic. You know, I mean, I think that's, you know, like when he calls Debbie a pet, it's, you're like, fuck that. Like, oddly to me too, for all the things that he said. And I think it probably is credit to Sandra Oh for making us like Debbie so much. But when he says, I like her the way that I would like a pet, that, of all the things in that episode, for some reason, that's like a gut punch more so than some. Yes. I think that, and when he says to Mark, what's another 17 years? I'll make another song.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Like, I think those are the two. Woo. Those are the two things that he says that just, from an emotional impact, cut the deepest. Like, you're just like, those were low blows. But as far as the reveal of the Viltrumite stuff, this is what Invincible successfully did for its entire comic book run, which is it would give you a thing that would be like, this is the biggest thing you'll ever have to deal with. And then it just sort of very easily transitioned into, oh no, now this is what Invincible is about. And when Alan comes back at the end to warn Mark that there's a Viltrumite on the planet, and Mark sits him down and he's like, okay, we've covered that already. And Alan all of a sudden is like, the coalition of planets is trying to get enough alien species together that we can stand up against the Viltrumites. No Viltrumite has ever left their post the way that Omni-Man did. This is really weird. Like all of a sudden, and Mark even says it. Mark says, I kind of feel good that there's this bigger thing out there. It makes me feel not so alone. And I think that it just all of a sudden, like, it opens up, like, this show just, that final scene where then Alan is like, well, what are you going to do now? And Mark says, I'm going to finish high school. But you see that everything that happened when Mark went to Mars is out there. Like, there's some shit going down on Mars. Yeah. You know, there's shit going down with those aliens that came and invaded early on. Like, all the things that just kind of were happening in season one while this overall Omni-Man story was unfolding are still out there. Yeah. And in addition to that, and Alan says it, he's like, the Viltrumites don't give up on a planet. And Mark could barely deal with his dad. And the only reason he got away was that Nolan had just a hint of humanity deep down inside of him where he couldn't ultimately kill his own son and didn't know what to do and took off. But any other Viltrumites ain't going to have that problem. So, you know, you leave season one on this huge, like, holy shit, this very personal story about this boy and his dad. And you say, oh, by the way, the next two seasons, we're opening this up and there's an entire planet of those dudes coming and there's really nothing that you can do against them. And that is really compelling.
Dudes and females, right? Yes. Both. Yeah. So they're all coming to kill somebody.
The females. I mean, there's, speaking of that, I don't want to get into too many spoilers, but there is some shit that goes down. And I will say this. There's a lot of things that Invincible does in the comics over its entire run that really challenge you as a comic book reader with the way they treat things and handle things. And a lot of the show really deals with, like, superhero teen trauma. Yeah. And I'm really curious to see if they really go as far as the comic does in some of those arcs. Because if they do, I think this is going to be a show that continues to just, like, knock people on their ass. And everything they've done in season one leads me to believe they will. So I'm very excited.
Good point. Shannon, what'd you think? Finale, all of this, and what it might be teasing as we go forward in seasons two and three, as you mentioned earlier.
I mean, the big turn about what Omni-Man's plan was. It was kind of like, as soon as episode one finished, I'm like, I feel like this is where this is going. Either he wants to take over the planet for his planet, or they're going to blow the planet up for whatever reason. So it's like, I kind of assumed that's where we were headed. That being said, when we got there and you're hearing these words for the first time, you're hearing a father say to his son these things. Again, it's just heartbreaking. And you know, kudos to the performance of J.K. Simmons. One, Viltrum is clearly like, what if Krypton were like Sparta? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we are.
Which I'll be honest with you, I didn't mind so much. I didn't mind, but, you know, let it be there. Go ahead.
I mean, the only the strong will survive on this planet. Now that we've got the creme de la creme, now we're going to do it to the universe is a truly frightening thing. And probably, like, I don't know if there's extraterrestrials out there. I don't think that's that much of a stretch.
Yeah. If there are. Yeah.
I mean, it's the Loki argument in Avengers. Like, you know, I don't have any concern about, you know, ant in the boot argument. But to go to the Debbie being a pet, it's not just what J.K. Simmons said, it's how he said it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so kind of like, really? You're going to bust my balls about this? Like his justification for it, which is the most frightening thing. Like, you know, you hear people who have pets and, like, you know, your pets become a part of your family, but then you hear other people be like, it was just a cat. It was just a dog. And he's saying this about his wife. Just a truly gut punch of a moment. No idea where the show is going to go. I mean, have some ideas, but yeah, can't wait to get there.
Yeah, I love the finale as well. I thought it was very, very well done. And yes, you're right. The way he doesn't say it to hurt Mark. He just says it so matter-of-factly, which is even more chilling because it is devoid. And you would think the one person who could maybe make him change his mind about how to view this planet could be her or is her. And even he is so devoid of emotion when he speaks about her. And this thing is just so pervasive throughout. But then he does hesitate. He doesn't finish his son off. So what does that mean? That's what we're going to find out in seasons 2 and 3 for sure. But I enjoy it thoroughly. And Alan the Alien, I mean, Seth Rogen is hilarious. But I'd love if they pinned this whole thing on Alan the Alien. That'd be hilarious on so many levels because of what he admits in those final sequences there with Mark. But yeah, it leaves you wanting more. It leaves you excited for what's to come. And maybe they, you know, maybe to Shannon's joy, they'll work on the animation for him. But overall, I think they really nailed it voiceover-wise, nailed it storyline-wise. I think they did a great adaptation of this thing. I'm looking forward to seeing what changes they make in seasons 2 and 3 to some of the storylines. And as Mike said, smoothing out some of the more underdeveloped characters or people like that. And will they lean into the violence or the gore of it even more as situations call for it as we go forward? We shall see. But overall, damn good series. Definitely worth a rewatch as a binge for sure. And I will say one thing. Rarely do you get an animated series that goes past 30 minutes that can be this engaging, chock full of chock full of storylines and interesting characters, and they certainly do it this time around. And that's a rarity in animation from my experience with animation. Mike?
I really hope. I loved an 8-episode run where each animated episode was 45 minutes. I think I would love to see this open things up and start to have more shows where we don't have an animated show that just cuts off. You have it in half hour chunks. Like, give us a 45 minute, give us an hour long. Like, I think that this does, to your point, it proves that not only can an animated show sustain that level of engagement, but that there is an audience out there for it. I think that, so hopefully this leads to more in that vein.
I agree with you. All right. Well, that's our thoughts on season 1 of Invincible. Thank you all so much for joining us. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MKToon. And if you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays.
Mikey?
Look, we hope you think of us as your buddies. Maybe you think of us as your pets. Either way, we want you to keep watching. So here's a couple things that you can do to keep us geek buddying out week after week after week. You can hit the like button below. You can subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw page. There's a ton of awesome content, lots of Geek Buddies content for you to engage with, but lots of other amazing content as well. Definitely leave us comments. What did you think of Invincible? Was the violence too much? Who were your favorite characters? Are you a fan of the comic? Without any spoilers, what are some things that you're excited about seeing? Let's keep it spoiler free as much as we can for all the people. But let us know what you think. We will get back to you. If you are listening to us on Anchor or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, leave us some rankings there. Leave us some stars, some comments. It helps more people find us. And of course, the best thing that you can do is retweet this video or post it on your Facebook page or send it around to your friends on social media and say, hey, those Geek Buddies, they're kind of fun. And we would really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And also, if you want to do an Instagram story about the show or this particular review, please do so on your Instagram and tag the Geek Buddies account so more people can follow it and we can keep building up that fan base as well. All right, that's it from us. Thank you all so much. Take care of yourselves and we'll talk to you next time. Another brand new episode of the
Geek
Buddies.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.